This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وشر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. It's very important that we become familiar with the lives of the righteous predecessors. There are many righteous people in our history that we don't study enough or talk about enough. Now, for many of us, when it comes to history, we learn about the lives of the Prophets alayhim wasalam and the Sahaba radhiyallahu anhum. But we don't go beyond that. And when we don't go beyond that, we are missing out on 1,400 years of legacies, 1,400 years of stories that we can derive a lot of lessons from. So today, inshallah, we're going to take a look at one of those historical figures who are very important and who is someone who played a crucial role in the history of Islam. Yet he is someone who many of our youngsters have never even heard about. In fact, many of our elders haven't even heard about, despite being one of the most important people in the first and second century of Islam. And that is the great caliph of Islam, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, rahimahullah. So who was Umar bin Abdul Aziz? Umar ibn Abdul Aziz was the eighth of the Umayyad caliphs. So the Umayyads were the first dynasty to rule over the Muslim world. They were a series of kings that ruled for about 90 years, starting with the great Sahabi Muawiyah radhiyallahu anhu, going on for about 90 years. This family ruled over the Muslim world. After that, there was a split between the Abbasids and the Umayyads, and after that, they had to move to Spain, and they ruled over Spain for another 290 years. So the Umayyads were the first major dynasty in the history of Islam. And in this line of kings, the eighth one to rule over the Muslim world was named Umar ibn Abdul Aziz. So he came from the royal family of that time, the Umayyads. Right? His father, Abdul Aziz, was the son of the great Umayyad king, Marwan ibn Hakam. Right? So it's Umar ibn Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan ibn Hakam. And his mother, this is where his lineage gets interesting. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz's mother, Layla, was the granddaughter of Umar ibn al-Khattab, radiallahu anhu. So on his mother's side, he is the great grandson of Umar radiallahu anhu. And on his father's side, he is an Umayyad. And that's why he's also known as Umar the Second, because he's the second Umar and the second Umar from that family to serve as a caliph over the Muslim world. So Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, he was born at a time which was very rocky for the Ummah in some ways and very good for the Ummah in other ways. So on one hand, the Ummah was dealing with a lot of expansion. They were taking over many lands. They were growing very wealthy. It was becoming a world superpower. Right, so at this point in time, the Muslims were growing into a world superpower. They had just conquered Spain, parts of India. They now ruled many countries across Europe, North Africa, and parts of Asia. They had become a superpower of the time. So the Ummah was growing and it was entering a new phase, a phase that was unknown to the Sahaba and the early Muslims. They never imagined that within 100 years, the Muslims would be ruling such a large portion of land. Now, with these new conquests and these new luxuries and all this new goodness that entered the Ummah, there also came a lot of new tests, because people weren't used to this level of success and this level of wealth and this level of power. And many of the early Umayyads, they fell into the sin of abusing this power, right? Of charging too much taxes, of living very lavish lifestyles, of enjoying too much of this world. And this began to cause some tension between the average person in the public and their rulers. Because this is like one generation after the Khulafa Rashidin. You had Abu Bakr, Umar, Usman, Ali, and now 50 years later, you have these kings living a lavish lifestyle. So it's during this era that Umar ibn Abdul Aziz is born. And he is born into both worlds. On his father's side, he is the grandson of the king. And on his mother's side, he is the great-grandson of Umar radiallahu anhu. And he grows up experiencing both worlds. He grows up experiencing the luxury of being of the royal family, but he also grows up experiencing the piety and the knowledge of being from the family of Umar radiallahu anhu. So for example, when his father was appointed as the governor of Egypt, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz stayed behind in Medina to learn from the ulama of Medina. So while his father was in Egypt ruling that part of the land, a young Umar bin Abdul Aziz is growing up in Medina under the care of Abdullah ibn Umar, his grandfather's brother, studying with the Sahaba, studying with the great ulama of Medina. So he's getting both worlds. He's getting this world of politics and royalty, and he's getting this world of piety and knowledge at the same time. And so what this does is he makes him a very unique individual in our history. He's one of the few rulers in our history that came from both backgrounds, the background of piety and the background of material wealth. And what's important is, when Allah finally gave him power and Allah chose him to be the person in power, he chose piety. He chose piety over royalty. So Umar bin Abdul Aziz grows up in Medina. His cousin Walid becomes the king. He marries Walid's sister Fatima, who's a very important person in the story. So he marries the princess, literally the king's daughter, and he is now both the first cousin and the brother-in-law of the king, right? Because his cousin Walid is now the king. And Walid appoints him as the governor of Medina. And the people of Medina love Umar bin Abdul Aziz. He's a pious man. He's a descendant of Umar radiallahu anhu. He's someone who's ruling in similar style to the Khulafa Rashidin. So everybody loves him in Medina. So Walid gives him power over that entire region, including Makkah and Medina. At the same time, rulers of other regions begin to get jealous of him. They begin to become jealous that people love him more than them. And people are migrating from their cities to his cities. So they start saying some bad things about him to the caliph. They start putting pressure on the caliph to remove him from power. Eventually, Walid finds it not worth fighting for. He removes Umar from the position of governor and makes him move to Damascus. Now, when Umar bin Abdul Aziz moves to Damascus, his cousin Walid passes away, and Walid's brother Sulaiman becomes the king. And Sulaiman and Umar had a very good relationship, right? They were cousins, they were brother-in-laws, and they were very, very close. So Sulaiman makes Umar bin Abdul Aziz his minister. He's one of his chief advisors. And he has a very close relationship with him during his reign. But Sulaiman suffered from health problems, and he only ruled for 3 years and passed away at a young age. Before passing away, King Sulaiman has a dilemma. He doesn't have any children who are old enough to be king. Because he passed away at a young age, his children are like 2 or 3 years old. So he can't pass it on to his children. His brothers weren't ready to be king yet either. They were very young, very immature, very spoiled. He also felt very bad about some of the mistakes he had made as a ruler, and he wanted to make up for it. So after consulting his advisors, they all told him to choose his cousin Umar as the next king, because Umar is technically still an Umayyad. He is the first cousin of Sulaiman and the brother-in-law of Sulaiman, and he's the grandson of Marwan ibn Hakam, so he's still technically an Umayyad. So it will still be in the family, but you will be with a righteous man. And so Sulaiman, before passing away, he chooses Umar ibn Abdul Aziz to be the next caliph. This is in the year 99 AH, 99 years after the Hijrah. So we're talking about almost a century after the story of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. The world's a very different place in the 100 years. And Umar ibn Abdul Aziz comes into power. He doesn't want to be king. He doesn't want to be the caliph. But Allah chose him for this position, and so he went into it with full sincerity and full effort, and he ended up making a lot of reforms that impacted the Ummah right until today. So Umar bin Abdul Aziz becomes the caliph. And what's interesting is that his reign coincides with the turn of the first century, right? He starts ruling at 99 AH. So in 100 AH, he is the caliph. And many of the historians, they linked this to the hadith, where the Prophet ﷺ said, at the end of every century, Allah sends people to revive this religion. And there's almost an ijma, a consensus amongst the historians and the scholars of hadith, that first revival, at the end of the first century, was Umar bin Abdul Aziz. That the Ummah was starting to stray. People were becoming materialistic. People were starting to get addicted to alcohol. People were starting to get focused only on money and power. And in comes this righteous man and changes everything. And so he's seen as the first mujaddid, the first reviver and reformer of the Muslim world. So what does Umar bin Abdul Aziz do as caliph? He does a lot of things. We don't have enough time to summarize all of it in a single khutbah, but just to give you an idea of how many important and radical changes he made as caliph. Number one, he removed the unfair tax or jizya on converts. Now in Islam, non-Muslims living in the Islamic state pay a tax called the jizya, right? But when they convert to Islam, they don't pay it anymore because they're Muslims now. The Umayyads, some of the early Umayyads, they were greedy for extra money. So even after people converted to Islam, they were still charging them the jizya, right? Because they just wanted that extra tax. And this had multiple negative impacts on the Ummah. Number one, it of course, it fueled the greed of the Umayyads. Number two, it became a barrier for people converting to Islam. Because one of the financial incentives of converting to Islam was they didn't have to pay jizya anymore. But now they're going to convert and still pay the jizya. Number three, it was causing injustice, right? And anytime there's injustice in the Muslim world, it affects every level of society. So one of the first things Umar bin Abdul Aziz does is he gets rid of this policy. He says jizya is only to be charged on the non-Muslim residents of the Muslim world. Anyone who converts to Islam doesn't have to pay jizya. And that includes all those who have already converted. And this has multiple positive impacts on the Ummah. The most important one is that thousands of people converted to Islam during the reign of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, because that unjust tax was gone and the door was open for people to convert. And there's a beautiful exchange that takes place. One of his governors writes to him and says, you know, if you stop charging this tax, you're going to be losing a lot of money. And Umar bin Abdul Aziz writes back and says, Allah did not send the Prophet as a tax collector. He sent him as Rahmatul Lil Alameen. This was his message to his governors. So you see the level of righteousness of this king. So Umar bin Abdul Aziz, he makes this change. He makes other changes as well. One of the major changes he made was that he increased the salary of ulama. And he paid a lot of attention to the development of the Islamic sciences. So in the early years of Islam, ulama had to be self-sustaining, right? They had to have a business on the side and take care of themselves, and they had to provide for themselves while studying. And the Umayyads came up with the idea that why don't we pay them a salary so they can focus on their studies, right? It was King Walid who came up with this idea. Let's pay them a salary so they can focus on their studies and their teaching. They don't have to worry about making money. Umar bin Abdul Aziz comes into power, he increases that salary. Why? So now there's more incentive for people to study Islam. There's more incentive for people to become ulama because they don't have to worry about money. And think about this today, how relevant is this policy today? Nowadays, one of the main reasons why people are not becoming ulama is they're worried about money, right? They're worried how they're going to take care of their families. In the time of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, they did not have to worry about this because he paid the ulama so well that it was actually financially beneficial to become a scholar in his time. And so this led to many people taking up the study of Islam during his lifetime who would in the next generation become great scholars of Islam. Not only did he pay attention to the salaries of the ulama, but he also paid attention to other aspects of Islamic knowledge as well. So for example, he revived the concept of having a shura committee, of having ulama who the king consults on every decision. So he had some of the greatest scholars of his time in the palace to consult him on major matters. So the ulama were now involved in running the country. Number three, he sent ulama to all the outlying regions that the Muslims had conquered, so they could do dawah to the people and they could teach the new converts, and so Islam could spread. And number four, this is one of his most overlooked but perhaps one of his most important contributions. Umar bin Abdul Aziz hired the leading hadith scholars of his time to start compiling and writing hadith into book forms. Right? So for the first 100 years of our history, hadith were primarily passed down orally from teacher to student. In the year 100, Umar bin Abdul Aziz said, we need to start compiling these into books so that they are not lost. And so the process and the project of compiling hadith into book form begins in the reign of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, rahimullah. This project only bears its greatest fruits 200 years later with the production of Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim. Right? But those books are the end result of 200 years of effort, of 300 years of hard work. It starts here when Umar bin Abdul Aziz passes this policy that we need to start working on this. Even if it takes decades, even if it takes centuries, we have to start working on this. And so they started that project in his lifetime, and 200 years later, it bears its greatest fruits. So Umar bin Abdul Aziz did all of this. But what's most amazing about the life of this great caliph of Islam, this great king, this great rightly guided caliph and pious man, is that he was only the ruler for 2 years. He was only the caliph for 2.5 years, from 99 to 101 AH. Everything I just mentioned and everything I couldn't make time to mention happened in a 2 year period. The amount of barakah that Allah put in this man's life, in this man's time, in this man's efforts is mind blowing. When you look back and you study his life, you cannot understand how did so much get done in such a short period of time. This to me is historically one of the greatest examples of barakah in the history of Islam, where a man comes into power for just 2.5 years and completely reforms the Muslim world. You know, many of those changes he made, they would impact the Ummah for the rest of time. Whether it was increasing the salaries of the scholars, where it was sending people to do dawah in the outlying regions, the development of Spain, which would eventually end up becoming, you know, the leader of Europe during the Muslim reigns. It starts in the time of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, where they start developing Spain. Whether it's the compilation of hadith, all of these things were done in a 2-year period. Unfortunately, after 2 years, some of Umar bin Abdul Aziz's cousins became jealous of him. They bribed one of his servants to poison him, and he died at the young age of 37. Think about it. This man passed away at the age of 37. And over 1,300 years later, we still study his life, we still marvel at his life, we still take benefit from his life, we still are amazed by how much he accomplished in such a short period of time. He lived in this world for only 37 years. He ruled the Muslim world for only 2.5 years. But what he accomplished in that time is truly a karamat. It is a miracle. It is a proof of barakah and one of the greatest examples we have in our history of what happens when a pious man is in charge of this ummah. We ask Allah to bless us once again with righteous rulers. We ask Allah to allow us to follow in the footsteps of these righteous people, to take lessons from their lives, to be able to draw lessons from their lives and to apply them to our lives and to be like them. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun, wa salamun ala mursaleen, walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Alhamdulillahi wahda, wa salatu wa salam ala man la nabiya ba'da amma ba'd. Just to draw a few lessons from the life of Umar bin Abdul Aziz. It's very important that as Muslims, we need to change the way we study history. One of the biggest problems we have today is that when we study history, we only focus on memorizing names and dates. And that's not what's important. What's important is that you derive lessons from history, that you learn from both the success and failures of those who came before us. That's the only way we're ever going to move forward. That you study any story in history and ask yourself, what can I learn from this? If they were successful, how can I imitate that success, even on a small level? If they fail, how can I avoid that failure, even on a small level? And Umar bin Abdul Aziz, there are so many lessons we can take from his life. You know, in my book about him, I actually have listed 15 lessons from his life. There are other books that list 25 lessons from his life. There's so many we can take. But yeah, just a few that each of us can apply. You know, even though most of us will never be in a position of political power, right? But we can still apply these lessons to our life. Number one, the importance of marrying a righteous spouse. We see this at every level of the story. Right at the very beginning, when you see the story of how Umar bin Abdul Aziz's grandparents met, right from that story, we see the importance of marrying a righteous spouse. So what the story goes, that Umar ibn al-Khattab, radiallahu anhu, when he was the Khalifa, he would go out at night to check on the people. And once he overheard a conversation at night between a woman who wanted her daughter to mix milk and water, right? It was a way of deception to deceive people about how much milk they were selling. And the daughter refused to do so out of fear of Allah. So he sent someone the next day to find out who this righteous young lady is, because he wants that lady to marry his son. And when he realized that there's a pious woman living here who's not married, he wanted a pious woman to marry his son. And so that woman married his son, asked him, and later on, Umar Rajanu had a dream that from the descendants, there came a righteous ruler. They had a daughter named Layla. And of course, she was raised righteously in Medina by the Sahaba and the Tabi'in. And she marries the prince, Abdul Aziz ibn Marwan. And they raised their son, Umar, righteously. And Umar grows up in Medina, being raised by the likes of Abdullah ibn Umar. And he marries a righteous woman, Fatima bint Abdul Malik. And what you see in every level of the story, for success to reach that level, everybody has to be careful who you choose as a spouse. At every level, someone is making sure they marry the best possible person. They're marrying a person of piety, because that affects the next generation as well. That's going to be the parents of the next generation. And we look at just in the case of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, he would not have been able to do what he did if his wife wasn't a righteous woman. Right? In reality, he had 3 wives, but this is the only one who's spoken about, because she was the person who could have blocked him. Why? Because Fatima bint Abdul Malik was the daughter, the granddaughter, and the sister of the kings. She was raised in royalty. She was the most powerful woman in the world at that time. When he chose to live a simple life, she could have said no. When he chose to live a simple life, she could have rebelled against him. She could have taken her brother's side. But no, she chose to live a simple life. Now imagine, your grandfather was a king, your father was a king, your brothers were a king. Imagine the level of luxury she is accustomed to, and she still chooses a righteous lifestyle. This is the importance of a righteous spouse. That this woman, Fatima bint Abdul Malik, was so pious that in the history books, she is referred to as Al-Amira to Zahida, the aesthetic queen, the queen who had zuhud. That was her legacy for this ummah. Second lesson we can take from the life of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, the importance of righteous parenting. Someone like Umar bin Abdul Aziz doesn't come about in a vacuum. He is the result of three generations of righteous parenting. You have Umar radiallahu anhu raising his son and then getting his son married to a righteous woman. You have them raising their daughter Layla and then getting her married to a good man. And then you have them raising their son Umar rahimahullah and him growing up to become this great caliph. And the scholars say his son was even more pious than him, because his son is now the result of five generations of righteous parenting. But unfortunately, his son passed away during his lifetime and never got to experience any worldly success, because he passed away at a young age in an accident. But he was even more pious than him. So we see that righteous parenting has a ripple effect generation after generation after generation. And the more generations of righteous parenting they are, the more greater people that will come in those later generations. A third lesson that we can take from the life of Umar bin Abdul Aziz is that it doesn't matter how long you live in this world. Allah has given each of us a set time in this world, and it's different for everybody. Some people are only in this world for 25 years, and some people are in this world for 90 years. Some people are anywhere in between that. Some people aren't even here for less than that, right? We don't know how much time you have. What matters is that you use the time that Allah has given you in a way that is pleasing to Him. If you do that, Allah will put barakah in your life, and He'll put barakah in your efforts. And we see that with Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahimahullah, he only lived for 37 years, he only ruled for 2 years, but Allah put barakah in everything he did, and the ummah continues to benefit from it right until today. And the final lesson that we can take today from the life of Umar bin Abdul Aziz, as our time is short, I mean, we don't have time to go into more lessons. As I said, there are dozens of lessons we can take from his life, but one last one that we can all apply today is to focus on sources of continuous reward. Focus on sources of thawab jariyah. Because if we pass away, we don't want our good deeds to end. If we pass away young, we want our good deeds to continue for decades, if not centuries. So for example, Umar bin Abdul Aziz developing Spain, that benefited the Ummah for centuries. Umar bin Abdul Aziz starting the project of compiling hadith, that benefits the Ummah right until today. All these things he did, being the cause of thousands of people converting to Islam. All of those thousands of people and their descendants and their descendants and their descendants for the next 1,300 years until today, inshallah, he gets a share in that reward. This is what it means to dedicate your life to sources of continuous reward. That even if you pass away at a young age, your good deeds never stop. It can be hundreds of years later, thousands of years later, and your good deeds continue to pile up. So let us spend our lives focused on building up sources of continuous reward for ourselves. So that even when we leave this world, our good deeds don't come to an end. And just like these righteous predecessors, you know, we can leave behind a legacy that benefits this ummah for hundreds, if not thousands of years. We ask Allah to allow us to follow in the footsteps of the righteous. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to continue deriving lessons from their life and to apply them to our lives. رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ رَبَّنَا هَبْ لَنَا مِنْ أَزْوَاجِنَا وَذُرِّيَّاتِنَا قُرَّةَ أَعْيُنٍ وَاجْعَلْنَا لِلْمُتَّقِينَ إِمَامًا سُبْحَانَ رَبِّكَ رَبِّ الْعِزَّةِ عَمَّا يَصِفُونَ وَسَلَامٌ عَلَى الْمُرْسَلِينَ وَالْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. أَقِيمُوا الصَّلَاةَ.